There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Jules Gill, it's 2024. We're no longer ill. We're smashing it, mate.
We are indeed. But you know what, my friend?
Go on.
We should definitely do is a 3, 2, 1 sync. There you go, mate. Now I've synced up your audio for you.
Thank you.
You forgot about that, didn't you?
I did a little bit.
Imagine getting this audio through from me and then being like, all right, okay, what's going on here? They're going to completely out of sync. But hello, everyone.
We've done many recordings in the past where I've completely forgot this and then just spent about 20 minutes trying to line up our conversation again. So it's a throwback, if anything.
Welcome to 2024, mate, where we do everything perfectly, including the start of the UBP, the UBP,
the UBP.
The Untitled Banter podcast with me, Jules Gill, joined as ever by Scott Telford. See, I've stolen your introduction as well, mate. I've taken over.
Double intros, mate. It's got to be done. Yeah, hope everybody's doing well. Hope you had a lovely holiday. Don't know about you, Jules, but I feel like watching the fireworks at New Year feels like a lifetime ago. I know it was only like 2 weeks or something, but still.
It's mad, isn't it? It's just like, I still think that you came up with the best quote ever when the big vid was going on, which was just time is a flat circle. And yes, I feel it. Just I look at weeks and months just slipping away and I'm just like, wait, what did I just do? My memory has got bad, or I've just entered that age of my life where I'm just like, eh.
Well, things like, speaking of bad memory, I can't even remember where I saw that. That wasn't a me original. I saw the time as a flat circle thing somewhere else. It's probably some really famous quote for all I know, but yeah. I remember that feeling. But yeah, Untitled Banter Pod, get through as many questions, talking points as possible. First one from Tarnished Yaz, who says, if you could have one selfish wish in the gaming industry, what are you picking? I want one year of no new releases so the devs can get a break and I can catch up on my backlog. Hope you and the team have a fantastic 2024.
Oh, bless. That's a lovely comment to start the day with. And you know what? That's a really good question as well, because what would you wish for in this industry? And
I've got such a ridiculous one.
Annoyingly, they've set the bar quite high with that one because it's like, it's selfless. It's for the people. It's making sure that the people who prop up this industry, that give us these great gaming moments, are taken care of and they're given a break. And also, that you get to work through your back catalogue. But maybe I'm going to be a bit more selfish.
Do it.
Unfortunately, I'm going to say, I'm going to wish for the resurrection of a franchise that unfortunately we had the final nail put in the coffin quite recently, and that was the TimeSplitter franchise.
Oh,
my wish is that it never failed and became as big a global hit as Call of Duty is today, so that you would go for your Call of Duties, your Battlefields, and your TimeSplitters. Oh, let's go,
mate.
Baby.
We had we kind of lived through the TimeSplitters COD era. Remember when TimeSplitters 2 dropped and it was like the world stopped for a bit? It was like, this is the peak first-person shooter.
I don't know if I've told you the story of that one, but it was meant to release originally on my birthday, and I got so hyped up because did you ever have like a homework diary at school?
Yeah, a little yellow thing.
Like pocketbook style thing that you'd write all these things down. And I wrote in massive sort of like felt tip pens alongside the classic S, you know, you used to do at school, like the Slipknot S style thing, which was basically saying TimeSplitters 2 release day on my birthday. And I was so, so hyped. Got there, and because this was like pre-internet times, the store clerk was just like, what are you on about? That got delayed loads. Like that was like, how did you not know that? It's like, because I don't have the internet, good sir. I have no idea. Absolutely gutted. But it was an amazing game when I finally got my hands on it. So good.
That's a really funny thing that's obviously going to date me and you, but there was a time before the internet, or the time before broadband, where I used to have to ring, or I guess people would have to ring game shops to ask when things were coming out, because all you had was the magazines. Yeah.
And putting your pre-orders in.
But yeah. I remember when it was the SmackDown Shut Your Mouth was coming out, and I had to ring up and be like, hey, have you got a release date for SmackDown Shut Your Mouth? And every time they would be such a dad and be like, what are you telling me? And I had to do the point and going, hey, I get it, but is it actually out yet? No, right, okay, I'll ring back in the next day. I'm going to go with a big scorched earth thing here. I think we should, if it's one selfish wish, then I want like a budgetary restriction on all video games. I think you should at maximum be able to spend, let's say, $100 million on anything, because that would force a level of either gameplay forward design. It would remove the ability for some entities, like the likes of Marvel and Spider-Man, to charge Sony, or for that development game, the cost for Spider-Man 2 to be $360 million. And it potentially would give the power back to the creators to say, look, if you want a Spider-Man game, we're doing it for this much. And I want to remove the bloat that's in the industry. I want to have a bigger variety of games overall.
Now, I totally agree with you, but let's just remember the massive tentpole games that do cost way, way beyond that figure. No one asked them to spend that amount, but they did anyway. You maybe wouldn't have your likes of God of War Ragnaroks. You wouldn't have your Spider-Man 2s. Like, you know what I mean? You're going to lose a lot of the top field, which many would say is the current peak of gaming.
It's so true. Well, the thing is...
Are you setting the... What are you doing is effectively... You're hampering the AAA gaming influence, but you're not... disabling the indie sphere, which obviously runs on much less cost. So maybe I am happy with that. I don't know.
Well, that's my thing, right? When I read this question, I was like, I would actually probably be fine just deleting that really top echelon of game production. Like, if you deleted the God of War, like the way that they're made. Like, I don't know about you, but what do you view as like the perfect era of gaming in terms? Because for me, it's sort of 2013 through about 2017. Like, the ability
that's a perfect
to
era gaming for you there
in terms of being able to like capitalize on a vision. Like, you think of the games that came out then, like The Last of Us 1 and Bioshock Infinite and The Witcher and everything else. Like, it didn't need to be lifelike graphics like The Last of Us 2 or Red Dead Redemption 2 or whatever. Like, it's so much money gets lost in just raw fidelity versus, you know, I mean, no one was playing Red Dead 2 going like, oh, I'm sorry, playing The Last of Us 1 going like, well, I can't get invested because it's not realistic enough. Like, no, it was bang on.
Yes.
Like, there's more you can do, but I'm just thinking, like, the amount of money that gets lost in licenses and rendering and fidelity and cutscenes, and I like that stuff, but I don't think it's the industry. I don't think it's the lifeblood of the industry. And I feel like we grew up with lots of gameplay forward games and they've kind of gone away.
You know what? You would actually have like a knock-on effect that would actually be really good for some of these annualized franchises that are just, well, absolute time sinks. Because, you know, we use FIFA as an example of like, it's a game that is the same game every year. Like, you're going to take, I don't know, like Cardiff FC all the way to the top, and then next year you can do the exact same thing again and the exact same thing again. Uh-huh. And all they're doing is changing the amount that the people are getting paid for their royalties. Now, if you capped yours at the 100 million, they might suddenly look at it and be like, right, we can only afford to make one FIFA game, but we'll turn it into a legacy game that gets updated each year with small... like updates, championship packs and stuff like that. You've then created a better game framework than you have by going, let's rip it all down and start again. Let's rip it all down and start again, because you're not evolving the formula. So I actually do agree with you on that.
I just think of like, how do you get back to an industry that was having a more steady rollout of games overall and not having first parties like the likes of Rockstar, the Naughty Dogs, whatever, waiting 5 years, 6 years, 8 years in between games. Like, I just want to get back to a more steady sort of clip of titles dropping that have bigger gameplay variation. I'm just like, how the hell do you get back to that? And I see one of the biggest issues with the industry is the amount of bloat and the amount of money that gets put. Spider-Man 2 cost them $360 million.
That's crazy money.
Yeah, it's like they have to sell, I think it was like 7 million copies or 8 million copies to just break even. And it's like, it's a ludicrous thing. And it's like, I have to imagine that a healthier industry would cost a lot less overall terms of the amount of money that's on the table each time.
And also it would give people more job security, because when these games, air quotes, fail to recoup these massive losses, like Final Fantasy 16 is still considered a failure by Square Enix, which is
they said it was
bizarre.
Okay.
Well, yes, but they
were like,
they kind
it was
of,
fine.
Yeah, it was okay, which is just absolutely bizarre to think of when they consider how much they sold for that. But staff layoffs obviously are come after these air quotes failures. Mm. So having a bit more security by them being like, right, well, 100 million's been hit, but you know, at least we've made back that money and it means you can keep your job.
Yeah. Well, even if they're, I was talking to Josh about it on the podcast earlier in the week, and it's like the likes of Insomniac losing staff is crazy.
Yeah.
Like the Spider-Man studio aren't sustaining as well as they could be is ludicrous. Yeah. And like Bungie with Destiny and being a Sony first party and everything. It's like, yeah, I feel like there has to be a reckoning at some point. And it's like, if I could force that through, I would try.
Didn't Unity or people behind that drop like 25% of their staff as well recently?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's,
well,
it's a bad time to be in the gaming developer industry.
Yeah, man. That's that stupid thing where John Riccitiello wanted to have an installation fee for every game that used the Unity engine.
I remember that.
Everybody pushed back. Yeah. He got fired. But then obviously the capital had dropped so much or whatever for the company that they still had to weather it and fire the staff. Like, that's a whole ridiculous series of events.
Yeah.
But yeah, question from a New Year's Gunner who says, I hear a lot that a game is locked on an old system and it's a shame that they haven't been ported yet, the likes of Wind Waker or Twilight Princess HD, but I find that it can potentially hold up progress. Is it better for the entirety of a series to be playable in one place at the cost of new games being made?
Well, does it need to come at the cost? Because it's like, it, with these online subscriptions that we've got, like Game Pass, we've got obviously Sony Plus, and then we've got the Switch Online stuff. Mm. These back catalogues of games that are owned by the first party developers, surely they should always just be on these online back catalogue
So
then you've got like your lineage packages, because somebody pointed out the other day that is it the Secret of Mana or Golden? Mm-hmm. There's something
Secret
like that.
Secret of Mana is being added to PS Plus right now.
Yeah, but there's another one that's been added recently to the Switch, and somebody else was like, Golden Sun, I believe it's Golden Sun.
That was just like last night or whatever. They're adding them to the Game Boy Advance collection, I think.
But you can only get that if you've got the subscription. Where's the option to purchase them separately, just as a package? I feel like that's the thing that's really holding people back from accessing these lineage moments, as it were.
No, that's true. I mean, on PlayStation and Xbox, you can get them separately. Like PlayStation has them as part of the PS Plus Classics, or whatever you call it, the Essentials tier or something. Whatever the top one is, gets you the classic library. But yeah, on Nintendo's side, unless you're paying monthly, you can't access, like, you know, Super Metroid or whatever it is.
Which is bizarre, isn't it, when you think about it? It's like, do you not want people to like play the original games and understand where they came from? Because we've all done this. Like, we've jumped into a franchise that's maybe five or six entries deep and just been like, what's all the fuss about?
Yeah.
If you go back and actually appreciate it from the beginning, then you're going to be like, oh yeah, I understand the fuss.
Totally. And it's just like, I think like there's ways to do it where I think, you know, the Wii U's approach was like, dump all these ROMs on the Wii U, and they largely played with the same resolution as the originals and everything. At least that's good as a way to access them. But yeah, I can't imagine the level of development taking that long to just sort of upscale a game. Maybe you sort the frame rate out or whatever it is. I know that it differs per engine and generation and whatever, but that should never get in the way of a new game entirely. It's not going to take 2-3 years to do that. You wouldn't have thought anyway.
The interesting thing is, though, is that if you start messing and dabbling around with the past and doing these remasters and refreshes, you do end up with so many cases that we've been seeing over the last couple of years with them coming out and them just sucking. They're just awful. Like the Grand Theft Auto Definitive Trilogy Edition, for example, or the Crystal Chronicles Remaster. It's just like, these are objectively worse games than the original, and I'd rather take the locked game that's on the old platform than go through this.
Well, my thing is as well, like, I don't know about you, but I don't care about them going back in and like remastering, remaking the whole thing. I just want the original available, and maybe you let me save at any point or something like that. Like, just quality of life stuff. You know, the higher resolution is welcome or whatever, but I don't need you doing what they did with Resident Evil 4, for example. That game's totally solid, but I'm barely going to go back to that. Like, Resident Evil 4 original still holds a bigger place in my heart because it was the original. It was the first time we did that stuff. So, like, I think there's a potentially a way to do it, but overall, if I had to pick between the two, I guess I would still go with the new stuff if I had to sack off the old stuff. I want the archive, but I don't want you giving up on new stuff for the sake of it.
That I see what you mean, because if you don't carry on the franchise is dead. Like, the past always exists, and unfortunately, even if it is an expensive journey to get these consoles and to play these rare locked games, that's one thing, but I'd rather that the franchise actually continued and gave people jobs and gave people more enjoyment overall.
Yeah, I just would be, it would be ridiculous if someone wasn't able to make, Naughty Dog weren't able to make their next game because they're busy remastering The Last of Us 2 again, which is, that would be a hilarious state of affairs, which could be true considering that's where they are at the minute. Question from Andrew J, who says, what goals are you keen to get started on this year, and what are you hoping to not repeat in 2024? Like a bad habit or boundaries that you've set yourself?
That's a good one. That's like your New Year's resolution, isn't it? So, I mean, for this year, I think that mine is going to be quite simple, but it is one that you all know from many moons of me talking about it because I'm quite slow when it comes to playing games. I'm aiming to play at least 5 currently released titles. Like, okay. As in, day one, I will be playing X. I will be doing this rather than waiting for the Game of the Year edition to come out, because I actually do want to stay more up to date with what's going on in the gaming sphere rather than just relying on my nostalgic appraisals of games and stuff. So yeah, I'm going to try and play more newer games.
Cool. Okay. Mine was when I totted up everything I played last year, it was about 63 games, but they weren't all new ones though. That was like including like the pixel remasters of Final Fantasy and going back through Max Payne and stuff. But yeah, I mean, God, have I ever totted up the amount of money that I spend on trying to keep up with the industry. It's most of my entire yearly wage.
I should probably state that I'm probably going to still rely on like review codes and Game Pass stuff day one. Like I ain't going to go crazy.
That's true. See, for me, when it was talking about like 2024 goals and stuff, obviously I'm all about the kid this year. Like little tiny T's arriving in a few months. So like I was thinking I should go to the gym and get like, you know, more in shape so I can run around after him and all that kind of stuff. But then I kind of know that I'm not going to really stick to that. I don't know. I've never been much of a gymsman, so
I tell you what, mate, there is one thing that is I'm similar in the sense that I like going to the gym, but I've have been slacking quite a lot recently. Right. I'm tempted to get myself one of those. It's called an ergotron, which just sounds straight out of Peep Show.
Yes.
And it's a thing you put on your desk that turns it into a raised standing desk, right? I'm thinking of getting like a walking pad underneath so I can walk and work at the same time, and then you'll burn the calories while you're doing the content, mate. Content and calories together as one. Boosh, boosh,
in
boosh.
A way, that's perfect. And then in another way, that's like the end of all things. That reminds me of
the end of all things?
That's
I'm just a gerbil in a cage running around in like that thing while I go over to my little giant water dispenser and start nibbling on that, getting a few droplets.
I remember
same,
when I was like...
Same time, like, ask me if I'm happy.
Well, that's...
No, I've never been happy. That's the joke.
I went in not being happy. I feel like that reminds me of like when I was young, and like I remember realizing I could buy a mini fridge when I was like a teenager, and I was like, oh, I could have a mini fridge.
Sorry, the realization, like, you know when you see like the baby finally becomes awake of its own existence, and then it's Scott just like, wait, there's a mini fridge? A fridge that is smaller?
Because in my head I was like, because then I was young, obviously when you were a teenager or even younger, I was just playing games all the time. I was in the bedroom, I'm not leaving, I've got to go to school. Like that's my happy place. That's where I'm very much content. And I was like, what if I put a mini fridge in the bedroom and I never have to leave at all? Yeah. That was the end goal. So
and
like,
then what have you got there? You've got yourself a studio apartment inside your house, and then there you go. You rent out the rest of your house. You're making a money saving. This is how
full of
sausage
rolls.
What we got to do to survive in 2024, mate. This is what we got to do.
There's
we are turning into the like you say, Ready Player One. Cyberpunk, everyone's plugged into one room and they never leave it. And you know what? Fine. If I'm not leaving this room, at least I might as well not leave this room and be in better shape.
I guess as long as you don't start wearing like haptic suits that like simulate, you know, like a breeze or the rain or anything.
I'm going to call my mate out actually on this one. I won't give his full name, but his name's Kai, and he's like absolutely in love with VR at the moment.
Right.
And he was just like, oh, bro, I've had a really good time. I've been, got my headset on that's got virtual desktop and I'm doing my work.
Oh no.
VR. And I was like, whoa, for a start, the work you do, again, I won't spoil which industry he works in, but he is boring AF, man. Like, it is real dry. So yeah, exactly. So you've got to imagine, it's like, whoa, I can go around this Excel spreadsheet. Whoa, it's almost like it's real. Whoa.
That whole thing, I don't know where you're at on that, but I don't get that. They don't get the appeal of that. Like, here, we're going to make it look like a monitor, but it's bigger and it's more see-through and it's less reliable. Like, and it drains the battery.
Yeah,
it's just in your face. Like, just strap a TV to your face. Like, I don't even...
It can't be good for your eyes, man, can it?
No, but it's like VR should be like an escape into another world or whatever. Like, let me be Spider-Man and jump off a building and swing or something. Like, I don't get the whole let's push to have a monitor in front of you thing. That feels like a huge, just a pointless step. Like, I don't... For the sake of £300 so I can hold it in front of me, like.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side?
helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
It's an odd vibe, I'll tell you that much, but that is the future, mate. So what you've got now in your mind is you've got me with my VR set on, with my virtual desktop. I've got a virtual keyboard as well, obviously, because I've got those haptic gloves that allow me to type everything there.
That wouldn't even feel like anything.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just punching the air. I've got my raised desk, which obviously has no purpose now because of the fact that I'm wearing a VR thing. And I've got my walking thing underneath there. So you've got to imagine, I'm just like, I literally am clawing. I'm
like
clawing
a one-man band.
Air. I'm just trying to dig for freedom. I'm digging for freedom, mate.
Hey, but you're ripped, mate. You're very healthy. You're feeling good.
Well, the thing is that because it's just the walking, I'll just have like buns of steel just from the constant like uphill climbs. Just really anemic, sort of like T-Rex arms at the top, and then just a big old booty down below.
Remember what it was like, the push for like controlling stuff with your eyes? I know PSVR 2 does it, but it's like if you look at certain menus.
Aren't Apple doing that with their VR?
I think so, yeah. Have you seen that video when you put the Apple's new one, you put the headphones VR headset on, it has a screen on the front of it, so that like, and the example they gave is a young child looking up at you and your projected face is what's on the front of the VR.
That's so terrifying.
Yeah, and I was like, that's horrendous. I don't want
straight out of Black Mirror, that is.
Yeah, literally. And it's like, there's so many things that just feel like Black Mirror skits come to life.
Yeah.
Question from Wayne Kiwami, who says, which game has the best UI? Their pick would be Dead Space.
I don't know what doesn't, and that's the bloody new Suicide Squad game. My God, that looks so bad. I think I saw your post about it, and you're like, this is atrocious. This is genuinely terrible.
I retweeted the thing because people have been sharing a lot of the, especially in combat, where it's just there's numbers flying everywhere. There's so many collectible things on screen. I imagine that when you get hands on with it, you can probably turn a lot of those things off. But the fact that they demoed it like that, it's a very easy thing to laugh at. That game, I'll be amazed if that does any numbers. I don't even know what type of human is into that. Like whether it's a Suicide Squad fan, a DC fan, you know, loot shooters.
It's one of those games that's going to be immediately on discount and people are going to lap it up because of the fact it will just be like, oh, half price, might as well give it a try. And it just seems like one of those like gruel games where you're basically just like, oh, there's just enough here to sustain my body.
That's
like
a game.
There is no nutritional benefit to it whatsoever, but I'm eating enough paste to stay alive. That's what that game looks like to me.
That's a really good category, to be fair. Honestly, that's the game for that dystopian future that we just described, where it's like, I've clocked off, I'm going to go game. What game? Just just going to game. I'm just going to game for a bit, and I'll just I'll do some inputs and outputs, and the dopamine kind of flacks a bit, and that's it.
That's the worst thing about it is that you look at that single shot of the UI, and it's absolutely chaotic. It's genuinely overwhelming to the point where I find it quite offensive. But in motion, you can see what they're going for, even if it is delivered in a horrible way. Mm. It is the constant numbers tell you that you're doing stuff. It's feedback. It's synapses flaring. It's constantly it's like, keeping you engaged.
I am fun yet.
Because do you know what it is? It's so desperately afraid that you'll stop paying attention to it and realize that there is no other substance to the game. So you end up just there like, cool, jangle the keys, jangle those keys, jangle them right now. And it's like, okay, well, I know you're doing it. So.
I feel like as it's been in development for so long, I did a video on it the other day just talking about the fact that it's been 9 years.
I watched it, yeah.
Thank you. And it's like, you know, the fact that we've waited this long for the next Rocksteady game, and there's no way that that it can recoup the amount of money that's got into it. And like the fact that it, even if it had landed in 2018, even if it had come out arguably when it, you know, maybe there was a version of it that could have been released back then, it still would have felt outdated. It still would have been in the shadow of Destiny and Destiny 2, of just being like, oh my God, we're sick of these defend the point missions or go, you know, to find all the loot and everything else. Yeah. Like I said, I'll be amazed if it takes off. I've long felt like Suicide Squad is just not it. It always feels like it's just not an IP that people like.
It is not good at all. But the thing is that the question was, what was the best UI?
Which game has the best UI?
And Dead Space is incredible.
Yes.
Because of the fact that everything is it diegetic, where it's in the game?
You're like, yeah, I think so, yeah. Like so your health is your hood,
spinal
thing column on the back
thing,
of your body. Yeah.
That is a tough one, actually, because Dead Space does it in a nice minimal way as well. It never feels like it's constantly overwhelming the player, but you do have all the relevant information at any time. So
I tell you what, my mind went to the likes. And the thing is, if you're going with minimalism, then some games obviously let you turn stuff off. Like Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom is really good with its dynamic HUD, where like whatever you're not using, it'll just turn it off so you can have a full screen thing.
That's a good idea.
It did make me think of stuff like Persona 5, where it's like beautifully you know, animated in terms of the transitions between
like
the menus.
Super stylized. Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess that's a little bit different to UI. I think ultimately for me, I want more stuff like Dead Space. And other than Callisto Protocol, hardly anything else has even tried to do that.
You got to think to yourself, like, good UI doesn't necessarily mean minimalistic. Like,
not
it doesn't necessarily mean like it's just a cinematic. It's what is best for the user and informs them about exactly what choices that they can make and what they're doing. So I'd say that a bad example would be Fallout 4 because of the fact you don't know what your character's going to say. So I guess any game that allows you to see exactly what dialogue you're about to speak and it is word to word what you're going to rather than just a vague approximation of like, oh, you're going to say something sassy. That's good. Didn't Mass Effect have like a decent AI?
They had a thing where you would like on the dialogue wheel, you would pick stuff that like approximated. It was way better than Fallout because Fallout 4 was just sarcasm or whatever. Yeah. Whereas like, Mass Effect was almost like a truncated thing. Mass Effect did that really good little, and it doesn't get enough, it isn't mentioned enough how well that stuff is written, where like whatever you pick, you might like the way that it's phrased on the dialogue wheel, but your character always does one better. Like if you're saying something insulting, they'll really nail it when they actually go for the voice performance. And it's like that's a really overlooked thing. Hardly any games even prioritize dialogue as an actual mechanic now anyway. But
I actually know exactly which one I'm going to suggest, and it's because I've been watching and I just needed to get his name up because he's popped up onto my feed recently and I can't stop watching his stuff and it's going to annoy me if I can't find it.
Mr. Hood.
Damn it, I'm not going to be able to find it, am I?
Harold Hood.
He's an ex-developer of World of Warcraft, and his name is I've got it here. It is Keep Making Games. Pirate Software is the YouTuber. He's an ex World of Warcraft employee and has so much good knowledge and information about making games, your relationship with games, how they use tricks and traps to try and get you to spend money, how to avoid them, how to basically how to use the act of manipulation for good and bad within the video game industry. And his little document, he does little shorts, but he does huge long form streams that are incredible. Cannot recommend him enough.
Stuff like that. Oh, sorry, go on.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say the advice that he gave was the reason Marvel's Snap is doing so well is because it was made by the people who made Hearthstone, which is obviously incredibly popular. And they said that when it came to designing how the game looked and felt, they had to make everything as clear and concise as possible. And apparently the UI design and the UX team were like months to years in development to make sure that this looked and felt right. And as I don't play this game, but I did watch some footage of people playing it, and it is so clear. It's a game that, and I'm not trying to say this to be mean, like, it's an idiot's game. Like anyone can pick it up and play it.
Yeah,
like, I could imagine anyone understanding how to get there to grips with that game within maybe a couple of minutes.
Well, that was what I was going to say. Was like the that idea of a UI being simplistic in the best way possible. Like you're supposed to be able to take the essential information in as fast as possible. And I feel like a lot of devs, the Suicide Squad one is interesting because a lot of devs or a lot of feedback teams make it so that they don't trust the player. And it's always like, we need to spell every single bit of this out.
As opposed to just trusting it. Down this breadcrumb trail.
Yeah, as opposed to just trusting the person. And but yeah, I feel like that. I feel like back at the time, Dead Space was like, oh, this is the new way the HUDs are going to be done. Yeah. Everyone's going to do immersive diegetic stuff. And hardly anyone ever does. If anything, we've gone the opposite way. Like, again, the Suicide Squad example. But yeah, Callisto Protocol did it again because you had Glenn Schofield as the same director. But I wish more was done to implement HUDs better.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you end up with games that do incredibly well, like God of War and God of War Ragnarok, and they are cinematic to the extreme in the sense that they, obviously, God of War 2018 was tried to do it all in a single take. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you had no breakaways or cuts from the action. And that was immersive. But as soon as combat starts, all of these things like appear on screen, like health bars and stuff like that. And I was like, so we haven't forgotten we're a game entirely, and we can't apparently find a better way of expressing danger and health and resources than this. And they, if you look at them, the text font and stuff like that, I genuinely don't think it fits. It feels like it's just like, here's a very minimalistic thing applied over the top of this.
What did you think of the way Monster Hunter does it? Where like when you get an enemy or you get a monster down to like low health and they don't have a health bar, they sweat like loads and they look like they're panting and they walk slower and stuff. I like that as an overall idea to do more with. But I always felt like they were in that sort of like, oh god, I'm knackered state for like 20 minutes. And I was like, well, surely you're on no health by now.
Well, that's the other thing about like going back to BioShock Infinite. It's one of the things that annoyed me the most about that game is that in BioShock 1 and 2, you would just go up to an enemy, you blast them in the face, and then you would just like, they'd be dead when they were dead. Whereas in this game, in BioShock Infinite, you had the numbers popping up over their head all the time. And I was like, oh, way to pull me out of a game. Like, this isn't like Destiny. This isn't that Borderlands. Like, I don't need to see these numbers. Take these away.
Yeah, that was such a trend for a while. Like Darksiders 2 brought that in, where when you, because that was more of an RPG, but like that whole thing of like showing how much damage you're doing,
but
popping off an enemy.
Meaningless numbers.
Yeah. And it's like, you're not like taking it in going like, oh, well, that bullet was 68. So like, oh, that next one should be like 75 or whatever it is. Like,
it's so dumb as well, because you end up like going like, oh, what's the difference between doing 971 damage and 999 damage when the opponent is on 500 health? Like, you know, what I mean? it's like what's the point? Who cares?
I was like turning that stuff off. I think overall, like my takeaway would be less HUDs in general, and try and find ways to show, like, because it's like the Fight Night series, like you would have different cuts and bruises and stuff on the person's face.
That was good.
So it's like little things like that you can do that are more in game. But I wonder about the level of focus testing that shows that maybe players don't even realize or something, and they're looking for the bar, they kind of want a representation of it. And then because FromSoft stuff has taken off so much with just a massive health bar across the whole screen for a boss, maybe that's the dopamine hit that you know you're so close to winning or something. Maybe that is like more
so frustrating when you get them like to two hits away and they absolutely clobber you and you're like, no.
That's one of the most soul destroying feelings on earth, like just knowing that you could have been free of this but you've got to go do the whole thing again. Question from Honest NPC, who says, UBP, I was lucky enough to get a PlayStation 5/Xbox Series X on launch, yet I feel like if I bought one now, I really wouldn't have missed out on very much. How do you guys feel about the current gen? How do you feel that the current gen has been progressing? And also, would pro models be a thing if they weren't so present in mobile phones? So I feel like that's like a tech thing.
Yeah, I think that at this point in time, if I was to buy a PS5 or Xbox Series X or S, now I'd actually say that there's a back catalogue of games worth playing, because there is more than 10 on each side. But for a fair few years, it just felt like a drought. There wasn't actually much going in that wasn't, like the exclusives at least when we were talking. There was a lot of games coming out, but they were just like, okay, what's the point of playing this over playing on the PS5 over the Xbox? Now, And a lot of people forget, though, that we've been through this before. Like, if you were an Xbox fan, you must have been feeling deja vu out the wazoo. Because remember when the 360 launched and all you had was Viva Pinata and Dead Rising? And
that was it. Well, Dead Rising was awesome,
maybe
though.
It was like 5 months later or something.
Yeah, it was like the next, yeah. But I mean, like, the way that they rolled out, though, like, I feel like the Xbox One was obviously like a desert. There was nothing there at all. It was just sand. And then, like, the way the generation is now, I'm happy with my PS5. I like having, being able to crank frame rates and resolutions and have a nice, smooth version of a game. But I don't feel like there's that many games on either side that prove that you need the system to run it. Like, stuff like Cyberpunk Phantom Liberty, like, that runs beautifully. It's actually designed for next-gen systems, so it can show everything off.
Yeah.
Returnal's a very smooth game. Ratchet & Clank has really cool loading techniques and stuff, but I do feel like I'm still waiting for something where I can hold it up and be like, oh, this is you need to, you know, the way this game loads its levels fundamentally couldn't be done before because it's working off the SSD or whatever. Like,
Spider-Man be the closest?
Spidey's so close. Yeah, Josh was talking about that the other day on one of the podcasts about like the way that Spidey 2 loads its map stuff and in the opening where you're fighting Sandman and everything, loading the whole city immediately. Like, but way more of that would convince me that you need a PS5. There's definitely tons of recommendable games, and the PS5 version of like anything is going to be better than the PS4 one. But it is a weird generation. I think just because it's been so many pandemic years.
Well, it's also going to be over soon. Like people just keep thinking that it's just like, oh, okay, cool. Eventually it'll get good. They're gearing up for another console release cycle pretty soon.
Yeah.
Like we've had. When did the PS5 actually drop?
2020.
So we are
coming
into 4 years, and they have usually a 6 to 7 year cycle. Is that right? Mm-hmm. So they're building it right now. They're going to start the hype cycle for maybe at the end of this year, beginning of the next year.
I think, like, I mean, it's going to be very telling how the PS5 Pro is received, because like we know we're going to do another half step system, and whether people just get it because it's like a tech mentality of like, I want to make sure I have the best new system. But I imagine there'll be quite a lot of negativity towards that, just because it doesn't feel like they've capitalized on the existing tech yet. But yeah, I mean, like, just last night it leaked that the Nintendo Switch 2 is coming in September.
That'd be an interesting time, because
we'll see.
I'm still on the fence about this, about whether they are actually going to go, right, we're actually going to put a ton of beef into this little handheld device and turn it into a real console killer, and you will always want to play your games like this on the go, or if they're just going to be like, look, we can't compete when it comes to tech and keep it small and portable and light, so here's just another weird little gimmicky thing. And I still think that VR is going to play a part, and I don't know why, I just think it is.
If that comes true, that'd be one of the weirdest swerves for them, but they did experiment with the Labo stuff. The rumor is that it's just like an iterative version of it, so I was like, call it the Super Nintendo Switch and just ride that out.
That's a good bit of marketing, that one, especially if you release it in those colors, and you just go like, look, it comes with, if you buy it now, you get like a year free of the subscription, so you can play all the old games as well. So they just go full on nostalgia bait by saying this is the future and the past all in one.
Yeah, I think you do a little bit of with the guts of it, but you sort of just call it Super Nintendo Switch and you continue with that. It's a bad example, but the most recent Pokemons were terrible graphically, rendering wise and everything, and they sold the most in Pokemon history. I definitely don't want them to repeat that, but it did prove that people don't need the graphical punch. They are there for the games, so there's a way to do just another Switch kind of thing.
Indeed.
We can wrap for now, though. We've done about 35 English minutes or so. Ivan Scott Turvett, that's been Jules Gill.
It has indeed. Thank you very much, and it is good to be back. It's good to see your face, although the audience can't see it, but I can, my friend. It's smiling and happy, and that's all that counts to me. So yeah, and if you want to stay up to date with us, then you can follow us over on the Twitters or X's, where it's at RetroJ, but the O is a zero for myself, and it is /LP89 for Scott, and you can check his account next Thursday when he's going to be putting out the call for the questions.
Perfectly done. Thank you all very much for all the questions you've sent in so far. Take care, and we'll catch you very soon.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.